This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's begin today with the New England Patriots cheating and allegations of a clumsy cover-up by their star quarterback Tom Brady. It brings to mind the Watergate scandal of the 1970s when the actual crime was overshadowed by the cover-up that followed, which led all the way to President Nixon. So here's Tom Brady facing a 4-game suspension for supposedly participating in a silly scheme to underinflate footballs and gain a small competitive advantage, as if he needed it. But now the NFL says he destroyed his cell phone in a blatant effort to obstruct its investigation. Brady denies it, but like Watergate, the charges of a cover-up have only made things worse for Brady and the Patriots. But that didn't deter Patriots owner Robert Kraft today, who slammed the NFL for rejecting Brady's appeal.
The decision handed down by the league yesterday is unfathomable to me. It is routine for discipline in the NFL to be reduced upon appeal.
Kraft suggested it was wrong to draw conclusions about the destruction of Brady's cell phone, and he said he regrets that he didn't appeal the league's punishment, the loss of 2 draft picks and a $1 million fine back in May.
I acted in good faith and was optimistic that by taking the actions I took, the league would have what they wanted. I was willing to accept the harshest penalty in the history of the NFL for an alleged ball violation because I believed it would help exonerate Tom.
But Tom is not exonerated, far from it. So now the NFL Players Association will take Tom Brady's case to court. What a mess. Joining us now to sort through it is Shalice Manza-Young. She's the New England Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. And Shalice, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Alan Milstein. He's a prominent sports attorney in New Jersey. And Alan, good to have you back on the program.
Glad to be here.
And listeners, we want to know what you think. Have Tom Brady and the Patriots just gone from minor cheaters to seriously clumsy cover-up artists? Or do you buy Robert Kraft's case that Brady is innocent and the NFL is out of control here? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Shalice, I'd like to start with you. Tell me a little bit more about what Robert Kraft had to say today. It sounds like he stood by his quarterback and really gave it to the NFL. What was his message?
He absolutely did stand by his quarterback, which he has done throughout this entire process since, it's being called Deflategate. Since this whole thing started, Robert Kraft has stood by Tom Brady. But today, he really went into almost stunning territory. Here is the owner of one of the most high-profile sports teams in all of America, not just the NFL. And he effectively slammed the commissioner of the sport. He said, in May, I agreed to not appeal the sanctions that were handed down to the Patriots as a franchise because he believed that Tom Brady would get leniency by him doing that, that by the team accepting its sanctions and not putting up a fight, that Tom Brady would be shown leniency during the appeals process, and that didn't happen. And Robert Kraft actually apologized to Tom Brady and the fans of this team and said he put his trust in the league and he was wrong to do that. And what he said today, really, as I said, it was really surprising on a lot of different levels, particularly given the personal relationship that Robert Kraft and Roger Goodell have had over the years.
Yeah, well, let's listen to a little more of what Robert Kraft said, because it really sounded like he was genuinely shocked that the NFL sort of didn't play ball with him, so to speak. That is, if he didn't contest the $1 million fine and giving up those draft picks, the NFL would reduce the penalty on Tom Brady. But here's a little bit more of what he said.
For reasons that I cannot comprehend, there are those in the league office who are more determined to prove that they were right rather than admit any culpability of their own or take any responsibility for the initiation of a process an ensuing investigation that was flawed. I've come to the conclusion that this was never about doing what was fair and just.
So, Shalice, what's at the heart of Kraft's case, that this process wasn't fair and just?
I think one of the things he mentioned today was a report that came out on ESPN just a couple of days after the AFC Championship game in which it was said that 11 of the 12 balls that the Patriots had played with in the AFC Championship game were a full 2 pounds under the league minimum mandated pounds per square inch. That being 12 and a half is the minimum. So the report was that 11 of the 12 footballs were 10 and a half PSI or less. You know, Robert Kraft was upset that that was never clarified by the NFL. You know, he indicated that the league itself leaked out that information as a way of making the Patriots and Tom Brady look bad and making it look like, yes, they really were up to no good against the Colts on that Sunday night here at Gillette Stadium. The fact that that was never cleared up, he feels like, you know, Tom Brady and his franchise have been made to look bad throughout this entire thing. Not that anybody was trying to be impartial or look at things in a fair light, that the science in terms of ideal gas law, which all of us know so much more about now than we did before January 17th, at least for myself, you know, the science behind it, ideal gas law, and how the PSI of a ball would naturally change if it was, you know, pumped up to 12 and a half in a warm room and then brought outside to 45, 50 degree weather. It's going to deflate a little bit, just right. Naturally, it's going to change. So I think a big thing is that Robert Kraft felt he was duped by somebody he's always been close to, and Roger Goodell, in terms of him agreeing to the team, as I said, him agreeing to the team penalty, and he thought that would lead to leniency for Brady. And then also that it just seemed like, and the phrase that I've heard over and over again is witch hunt, that a lot of people here at Gillette Stadium feel like this has been a witch hunt from the beginning, and
yeah, they really feel like they're
desperate to pin something on the Patriots.
Yeah, they really feel like they're under siege. So, Alan Milstein, let me come to you. The NFL Players Association says they'll take this to court. What will be the basis of their case?
Well, when you try to disturb an arbitration award, you really can't appeal the substance of the award the way you could in a trial court decision. So I know you started the program with the idea that it's a cover-up, but whether Brady destroyed his cell phone or not is not going to be an issue at the district court. The only thing they're going to, I think, find at the district court is that the arbitrator in this case, the commissioner, was biased and shouldn't have served as the arbitrator.
Shouldn't have served as the arbitrator because he handed out the original penalty, right?
That's right. That's right. And that seems to me that's a very easy argument to win.
Huh. Now, yesterday the NFL filed a statement in federal court in New York arguing that the commissioner has the power under the collective bargaining agreement to punish players for conduct detrimental to the sport. I mean, do you think that argument carries enough weight?
No, and as a matter of fact, that was really a fascinating thing that the NFL did. So, you know, when parties are in an arbitration, when they've agreed to resolve their disputes in what's called alternate dispute resolution, and a plaintiff in an arbitration, let's say, gets a $100,000 award, the plaintiff will go into court to confirm the award so that he or she can execute on it. That's the only reason to go into court to confirm the award. There's no reason at all for the NFL to try to confirm this award. No reason whatsoever. The award is, the ruling is self-executing. If he's been suspended for four games, then he's suspended for four games. You don't need a court to confirm that he's suspended for four games. And what they did was they filed in federal court almost at the exact moment that they issued the decision, because they knew Brady didn't know when the decision was coming down or even what the decision was going to say. So they wanted to preempt Brady from filing in either district court in Boston or the preferred venue for NFL players, the district court in Minnesota. So what I think is going to happen is that the union, on behalf of Brady, is going to file a motion to vacate the arbitration either in federal court in Boston or in federal court in Minnesota. And then you'll have these two courts sort of deciding among themselves which one should be the proper venue.
Interesting. So, Shalice, let me come back to you, because we just heard Alan Milstein there saying that, you know, this really isn't about whether or not Brady was involved in a cover-up, but it's certainly the headline over the last couple of days, and I'm just interested to hear from you, what did Tom Brady say about that? Because I know he issued a lengthy statement on his Facebook page talking about the destruction or the alleged destruction of his cell phone. What did he say?
He did. He said that he said the phone broke, not that it was deliberately destroyed. And he said that he switched phones when he did because his old phone had broken, and his legal team had already made it clear to the NFL that they weren't going to take possession of any phone that he had at any point, which, you know, the NFL as a private entity has no legal basis to compel Brady to force him to give up his phone at any point in time. So, you know, Brady said that they offered all of the phone numbers that he had used, the phone that broke. He offered the NFL all of the phone numbers that he had been in contact with while he used that phone, that they could reach out to those people if they wanted to. Really, the league was only trying to get in touch with a couple of people. You know, they weren't going to call Brady's seventh grade best friend from out in California, certainly. They just wanted to see, did he have any text messages or any sort of phone calls with team employees or other people where he would have talked about, you know, deliberately deflating the footballs or what was going on in the days after the AFC championship game and things like that. So Brady said, you know, they did go to the phone company to try to get records of his text messages. It could not be done. They did provide the phone numbers of all the people he had contacted with that phone. And he said, any suggestion that I deliberately destroyed my phone as a means of keeping information from the league is wrong. And that's, of course, how the league painted it, because that's what gets the headlines. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier in trying to make Brady and the Patriots look bad.
Right.
You know, if you read Roger Goodell's 20-page document from yesterday explaining why he decided to uphold the 4-game suspension, there really isn't anything new in there. The only new information is the league alleging that Brady deliberately destroyed his phone on the day that he was supposed to meet with investigators.
Right, right. It doesn't look good, though. I mean, you know, I mean, it doesn't look good for Tom Brady.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, we all watch TV and movies or whatever, and what does the bad guy do when he's trying to cover his tracks? He destroys the evidence. So it's natural for people to make that leap. Well, why did he destroy the phone if he didn't have anything to hide? But Brady's story is that the phone broke, and he simply was switching phones because, you know, his phone broke, as all of our phones break at some point. So,
yeah. Well, you know, Alan Milstein, what do you hear in this? I mean, just in terms of appearances, because, I mean, do you buy Robert Kraft's case? I mean, isn't Brady and the Patriots, don't they have a tough case to make here? Brady, the phone was destroyed. The Patriots did suspend two employees in the wake of the Deflategate allegations. Kraft did accept the NFL punishment without a fight. I mean, doesn't all this sort of strain credulity for him to be out there saying, you know, it's just nothing, none of this happened. It's just not true.
I mean, I don't think so. I think the end result's going to be no suspension at all. The Kraft speech was a very, very peculiar. It's hard to believe that they decided not to go by way of appeal of the very, very heavy fine and other reasons to punish the Patriots, because they trusted that the NFL would do the right thing and then not go after Brady. It was just such a huge miscalculation.
Yeah. And yet it was sort of the conventional wisdom of the time. I mean, among sort of reporters and journalists were sort of writing about that, sort of saying this is probably what's going to happen. He's going to take his punishment and Brady will have his punishment knocked down a bit, and that's sort of the way it's going to go.
Well, I mean, I certainly didn't think it was a good idea. I mean, the rule says that if there's a underinflated football problem, it's a $25,000 fine. So how in the world did it turn out to be $1 million fine and a loss of draft picks? And the other thing that I thought was very odd, I mean, the league can't have it both ways. Either this was a team decision to underinflate the balls, in which case the team would suffer the penalty and the fine, or it was a Brady conspiracy to underinflate the balls. And it can't be both. I mean, if the team did it, then you penalize the team.
Right.
You know, why penalize Brady? You know, because he's the quarterback, he feels the ball. Well, the center is the first person to feel the ball. You would think the center would know if the balls were noticeably underinflated. It's just shocking to me that the Patriots made the decision that they did.
Hmm. Shalise, I want to come back to you for just a final comment. I mean, what's the mood like there in sort of Patriots world? I mean, they're about to begin training camp. What's going on?
For the Patriots, the players and the coaching staff, it is business as usual, and I would really expect nothing less from Bill Belichick. I've covered this team for going on 10 seasons now, and nobody is better at getting his players to focus and, you know, tune out the noise, as they call it, than Bill Belichick. So we did speak to two team captains today, Matthew Slater and Devin McCourty. And, you know, while they have all the respect in the world for Tom Brady, I am sure they no doubt would much rather have Tom Brady as their quarterback for the first four games of the season if things hold up the way that they are currently. They said, we believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. We have confidence in Jimmy Garoppolo, the backup quarterback, and we just have to take things day by day and prepare for the 2015 season. And that's the message that Bill Belichick gave us. You know, he is, as we saw in the 2007 season, the Spygate incident happened early in that season. And what happened, the Patriots went 16-0 in the regular season, and they came within one amazing catch of being the first 19-0 team in NFL history. So I'm not saying that could happen again this year necessarily, but nobody gets his players to focus and tune out distractions better than Bill Belichick.
All right. Well, he's got a big challenge ahead of him to tune out this set of distractions, but I agree with you. He's got a pretty good track record here. That's Shalise Manza-Young. She's the New England Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. Shalise, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
And Alan Milstein, a sports attorney, joining us from New Jersey. Alan, thank you as well. Good to have you.
All right. My pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, we're joined by the presidents of Berklee College of Music and the Boston Conservatory, who are in talks to merge their institutions. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.